Over time, the idea of convenience has been sold to and taken a priority in our culture. Often this convenience results in negative effects to our environment. One-time use items like plastic shopping bags, straws, coffee cups are all items that we can use daily and be thrown away. When it comes to the beer world and environmental footprint, the container is a big item to consider. For sure, cans and bottles are recyclable, which offers a reduced impact. There's also been some debate on the idea that cans are better for the environment than bottles, which we touch on a bit in this interview. One thing that other countries are still doing, which has fallen off the American radar, is the idea of washing and reusing bottles for beverages like beer. This is not a new thing, and it makes total sense, right? Well, enter Nick Munson Phelps, the refillable program manager for Bottle Drop Refill. Nick has been leading an effort in Oregon to design and implement a refillable bottle program that breweries have already started using. Join us on this episode to learn all about the sustainability and benefits of using refillable bottles on this episode of Branding Brews. Thanks for checking out Branding Brews. My name is Ryan, your host, and also the owner of Craft Brew Creative. With over 15 years of experience in branding and design, I am able to bring my knowledge not only to this show, but to great clients that make great beer. From the essentials like websites, labels, tap handles, and sales sheets, to merchandise and vehicle wraps, Craft Brew Creative would love to help develop a cohesive and strong brand for your brewery. Craft Brew Creative thrives on delivering value through a collaborative, fun, and interactive design process. Whether you're an existing brewery or a brewery in planning, Craft Brew Creative will be a valuable partner to your team. If you're in need of any design or marketing services, I would love to get in touch. Head on over to craftbrewcreative.com for more information, or just feel free to email me, ryan@craftbrewcreative.com. So welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Branding Brews. I'm your host, Ryan Whedon, a graphic designer focusing on the craft beer space. And today I am joined by Nick Munson Phelps, who is the refillable program manager for Bottle Drop Refill. Going to be talking about some fun stuff regarding sustainability and like refillable bottles, which is kind of a cool initiative that Nick has taken up here in Oregon. How's it going, Nick?
I'm well, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for joining. So why don't you kind of give everybody a little background about who you are and what you've been up to and kind of like what's led you to where you're at now and what you're doing now.
Great. I guess I can go all the way back to when I first started becoming interested in beer in college. I was studying in Canada and had my first sort of craft brew. It was a buckwheat, spicy buckwheat beer. And I just immediately fell in love with craft beer. And in Canada, they have a very robust refillable bottle program. So I kind of came of age for craft beer in and around an environment that was buying glass that was, you know, you'd buy your bottles in these sort of scuffed up shape. You drink them and you bring them right back to the store for your deposit. And you knew they went back to the brewery to get washed and refilled. So to me, that was a very like common sense activity. I knew it was different from the U.S. I grew up in Chicago, but so I'm a U.S. citizen. But being in Canada was definitely a glimpse of how a very modern culture can take on a really cool environmental stance and still have a robust beer culture around it as well. So my love for beer continued to grow, graduated from my program, and then went on to the Siebel Domans Beer School in both Chicago and Munich. Got my degree in brewing technology, and then came out to Portland, and I've been working since 2008 in a number of breweries, distilleries, mostly in production environments, and have always had this sort of dream of bringing a more sustainable practice to the Oregon beer industry. And this idea of refillables has just been germinating in my brain since then. And I explored it as a business concept probably back in 2012. And it is a huge undertaking, multi-million dollar endeavor, setting up infrastructure, bottle washers, all sorts of heavy capital investment is needed, and basically did not have any of that. So I put that to bed and kept on brewing. I brewed at Portland Brewing Company, Laurelwood Brewing Company, and more recently Breakside, where I was their lead brewer. And around that time, I was talking with Jules Bailey, who is the chief stewardship officer at the Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative. And that's the company that basically has all of the infrastructure for deposit containers for the state of Oregon. And lo and behold, he was doing some research for refillables himself. So we connected and we chatted a long time about how it could work in Oregon, what the necessary steps would be, what brewers would be interested, how you can actually shape a refillable program in the United States, because every sort of landscape is going to be different, and Oregon's no exception. So yeah, one thing led to another, and about 9 months ago, I started full-time at OBRC managing this program. So that's kind of like essentially start to finish how I got where I am.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. It sounds like quite a background. That's great, man. Cool. So can you maybe just give like a little quick rundown, what the refillable bottle is, just kind of, yeah, where you're at with it, just kind of just the overall concept and how it works.
Absolutely. So, as maybe some listeners already know, there are some breweries in the United States that are doing refillables. And it's not just limited to breweries. There's, you know, some dairy companies that do it, some tea companies that are doing it, probably some industries I've even never heard of that are using glass bottles to, you know, use and reuse over and over again. But really the limiting factor there is that it's very limited to one producer. So one producer decides to take on refillable bottles as their passion project. So what they're doing is buying thicker walled glass, packaging their product, distributing it at usually in a very small radius, and then trying to get all those bottles back so they can wash them and reuse them. And that works in a very isolated way. If you're distributing outside of a capture zone that, you know, you don't have access to, or, you know, say your bottles are going from Portland to Wyoming, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to truck those bottles all the way back. And so we were looking at how to design a system that would allow for bottles to be returned and cleaned in a very efficient manner. And mostly Canada has this down. Germany is doing an okay job at this, but Canada has one specific bottle that every single brewery is using, and they call it the industry standard bottle. It comes in a couple of different colors. You can get a Flint, which is clear, you can get green, and you can get brown. Other than that, it's the same bottle across the board. And what this does is helps immensely brewers who want to be in refillables. They don't necessarily have to get their own bottle back. They can get any bottle back, wash it, and out the other end comes a brand new, or, you know, like a brand new used bottle that's just like the one they've been using. So we realized early on that this bottle has to be a standard across the board, and it has to be different than the bottle that's on the shelf. So we want consumers to know at first glance that the bottle that they're grabbing is a refillable bottle. So the design step was really, really important. We got a couple of brewers in the room and other industry stakeholders to kind of craft what this bottle would look like. And Ryan, I'm not sure if you're able to add an image of the bottle to your website, but I'll definitely pass that along.
Yeah, totally.
On the bottle, it has it says it's refillable. It says to please return, and it has our the program name Bottle Drop on it. In addition, the shoulder is a lot more angular than a typical bottle. So where a lot of bottlenecks have a kind of soft shoulder and a nice curve to it, this bottle is more straight, which definitely sets it apart. And another added benefit from having a unique bottle on the market is that it helps us internally shape sort the bottles. So whether we're pulling it out of a case, or whether we're having image recognition or shape recognition software identify these bottles as they kind of go down our bottle stream, having a unique shape is incredibly important. So we've come out with two bottles. We have a 12-ounce amber and a 500-milliliter amber. We see the market really moving towards 500 milliliters as the large format option. So for people who just want a single-serve bottle, 22-ounce bottles are losing popularity rapidly and in favor of the 500s. And so that's why we went with that format. And, of course, six-packs are still alive and well. So we wanted brewers to have options when it comes to this.
So I think there's a couple of things here that, you know, that relate to branding and marketing, and some of that I think would be sustainability. Talked about that a lot on this show, and I think that's a great thing for a brewery to market and to have under their brand, is the sustainability aspects. I think one of the things I think is interesting, and just kind of hear your insights, because I know you know a lot about this, but the sustainability aspect, and obviously there is a large can craze right now. The 16-ounce can, 4-packs are all the rage everywhere. There's been a big a big push on the sustainability of cans and the benefits of that. And I think a lot of breweries have jumped over for partially for that sustainability reason. Mm-hmm. Obviously also other reasons too for the actual beer inside of it. But obviously being able to wash bottles brings in like a whole new scenario, I guess, in regards to sustainability with the packaging. So can you maybe kind of talk about the comparison, maybe the, because it seems like there's also some kind of like misunderstandings on the sustainability of cans. And so I'd love to kind of hear what you think or what you know in regards to comparing bottles, refillable bottles, obviously, or bottles in general, and in comparison to the sustainability of the cans.
Yeah. So cans, I think, became sort of the environmental choice when, it was probably about 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, when they started really becoming more in the lexicon of brewer's offerings. And the main thing I remember people talking about was the shipping weight. 100 cans is probably the same weight as a couple of bottles. Cans weigh almost nothing. And they cube out really well. So you can fit a lot more cans into a smaller space than you would be able to with bottles. So for freight purposes, when you're shipping cans, point A to point B, they're hands down the best package for beer. And they definitely have a lot of carbon savings when it comes to that. But that's definitely just one part of the picture. When you're looking at life cycle analysis, which is kind of the gold standard for how sustainable something is, which is basically taking the very, very beginning stage of a product, so say a glass or a can, it's the mining of the raw materials and then the processing of those materials to make the glass, and then the shape forming, and then any labeling or inking that goes onto the can, and then ultimately the end of life practices, whether that gets landfilled or re-recycled, etc. And what energy inputs and what environmental impacts those have. So starting with glass, glass is mostly just sand and limestone. Those are the two main ingredients. So mining it is actually relatively low impact, low environmental impact. When you look at aluminum, main ingredient is bauxite, and mining bauxite is really tough environmentally. So from a raw material standpoint, bottles definitely have an advantage. When you put those two together in the American, like if you just like look at recycling rates all across the United States, recycling rates are much higher for glass bottles than they are for aluminum cans. And that tips the scales in favor of glass bottles for sustainability. So on the whole, if you're an average consumer wanting to have a lower carbon footprint, you'll want to choose glass in the United States. Oregon's a lot different. However, we're a bottle bill state. We redeem nearly 90% of all containers. So our recycling rates are super high, among the highest in the nation. And we don't have any environmental data specifically for Oregon, but bottles and cans are almost the same at that rate, because the recycling rate is super high for both. And then the end of life for a container is also a big consideration. So when you recycle a can back into another aluminum product, whether it's a can or something else, the smelting process is a really high energy input, and there's a lot of pollutants associated with that. Glass is similarly high energy, but the pollution is much, much reduced. And either way you spin it, taking a really nice package and then breaking it down and putting it through a blast furnace at 3,000 degrees is just it's a tough proposition environmentally to have a 12-ounce serving of beer. Like at the advent of glass, right? Glass is a super durable, non-porous material. It has basically throughout history always been a refillable package. It's not been something that people would make a glass container, use it once, and then break it and make it into something else again. You know, think about your dishes at home. You wouldn't do that. So you know, the same applies to a lot of these countries like Germany and Canada and all over Latin America, where they really never lost their refillable program. Bottles, you know, starting since, you know, breweries were first packaging a couple hundred years ago to present day, have been washing and reusing the bottles. So when you look at the sustainability parts of a refillable bottle, you're not introducing, you still have to make the bottle in the first place. So there's some energy inputs there, but you're not introducing that additional compaction or breaking of the bottle, sorting, and then finally the high energy input of, you know, actually melting the glass and creating a new bottle again. You're just putting it through the dishwasher essentially. There's some water associated with that for sure, but modern bottle washers use about a third of the container's worth of water to thoroughly wash and sanitize a bottle. So if you think about that, if you ever rinse a bottle in your sink at home, you're probably using more water than that to just rinse it to put in the recycling. If from a water use standpoint, it's almost a non-issue. They're incredibly efficient. And then I'd say the other factor is that these bottles aren't traveling too far. If you're hauling bottles 1,000 miles to wash and refill and then back to the brewery, then, you know, you're spending a lot of your carbon credits on just transportation. And that you end up losing there too. So in places like Canada and Germany, bottles really don't travel very far. So if you're looking at the whole picture, calling one-way bottles and one-way aluminum cans kind of in one basket, roughly equally sustainable, the carbon footprint of a refillable is about 25 times less than those containers, because with each use and reuse, essentially cutting the carbon footprint in half. You know, it's like one time you didn't have to crush and melt that bottle. So there's a lot of different statistics out there, and we're actually going to work with the Department of Environmental Quality, Oregon, hopefully to do a life cycle analysis on refillables in Oregon. But most of this research is done in places where there is already a refillable bottle network. So you can actually study the impact, you know, of the container as it goes through the system. So, you know, this data is being pulled from places like Europe and South America and Canada.
Yeah. So that's, man, it's interesting stuff, and it's crazy that it takes such little amount of water to wash it. That's I'm sure a big aspect of that. So for a brewery that's that's focused on sustainability, maybe that's one of their core kind of brand elements is their environmental and sustainability aspects. You kind of mentioned when we talked before about the footprint. And the environmental aspects of the containers or packaging. So, I mean, if a brewery is trying to be more sustainable, they're probably going to try to have better water use practices, energy use practices, trying to reduce their energy use. And then, so obviously then the container is going to factor into this too. How much of the container, would make up kind of the environmental footprint for a brewery?
So for packaging breweries, if you look at a container, in all of its elements, starting from the top, you've got the crown to the bottle, to the beer inside, which is, water, hops, barley, and yeast. You've got your label, and that's pretty much it. Of all those elements, the containers comprises about 40% of the entire carbon inputs to that container, to the whole package. The rest are kind of in, 15 to 20% range. So when you're looking at like the low hanging fruit of where to focus your sustainability efforts, the containers definitely the first place I would look as a brewery. And, there are some breweries, I know like New Belgium has certainly given this a look over with refillables because of that. And they struggle because of one, they have a national footprint, and two, there is no way to recapture their bottles in an efficient manner, right? So, in Colorado, there's no deposit. There's no collection of containers. They just pretty much end up in recycling bins or trash cans around the state. So creating that infrastructure is incredibly costly. And based on their reach, they're not able to do that. I think in Oregon, this is certainly a really good testing ground for a program like this and other bottleable states, where there are centralized collections. I think you nailed it. Like when you're trying to actually be sustainable as a brewery, it's really important to look at what is driving your sustainability and not just what's one little thing you can do. Like, oh, can I use a recycled paper stock versus a plain paper? Like, that's great. But if you're trying to have impact, it's important to look at the details of where your carbon and energy inputs are.
Yeah. So, so what would it take to get like this kind of washable, refillable bottle programs into other states? I mean, obviously I'm sure that's something you're looking into in general, but like you mentioned, like New Belgium, and it's just kind of a, yeah, I mean, it would be great for this kind of be able to catch on and spread. And so for breweries that are larger like that, they would be able to use these washable bottles. What is it going to take to get this to like other states to make this a more of like a realistic possibility for all over the U.S.?
It's a very loaded question. There's a lot.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot. Okay. Well, like, do that as simply as
absolutely.
You can.
So the way I see it is, 50 years ago, we were all like, refillables were what everyone was doing. It wasn't like, oh, cool, this is a refillable bottle. It was, no, this is a bottle, and I take it back to the store because the brewery or the soda company or whoever, they need their bottle back so they can, you know, refill it. Like, that was just, that was the common understanding.
The good old days,
right? When, I mean, and if you think about that, it's like, you're looking at your package in a very different way. There's more of a responsibility on the producer and the consumer as well, right? They look at this in a way that's not a disposable product. It's something to be taken care of. So getting back, how do you get back to that, right? I think I'm pretty hopeful in that only 50 years has elapsed since then, right? What we've done since then is we've slowly broken down the infrastructure that we need to make that happen. And what is that infrastructure look like? It's, I think it starts with the consumers wanting it back, right? It is also, you know, you have to involve distributors in that. They have to be willing to take their bottles back to breweries. Retailers have to be willing to take back bottles. Or, you know, not crush them. And third, the producer, you know, back in the good old days, as you said, it wasn't a centralized wash facility, which is something that, you know, we're doing. If you were packaging your bottles, if you were packaging your product into a bottle, you had a bottle washer. That was the first step of the process. Dirty bottles come in, they go through the bottle washer. They come out clean, they get inspected, and then they get filled. That was the sort of way packaging lines were set up. So that's, you know, that's the other piece, is that breweries have to want to start investing money and space and training into that. You ask a brewer, any brewer in the U.S., you know, you show me how to run this bottle washer, and they'll have no idea. They don't exist. Mm. So, you know, we're taking the first step in bringing all these foreign concepts back to life. And, you know, like anything that is worth doing, I think you have to first show someone that it can be done and what that looks like. And hopefully this gets replicated. You know, in Oregon, we are very fortunate that we had a bottle bill that went through. I mean, that's a government piece, right? You've got the actual legislation that got passed. People stood behind it. In fact, back in the day when it was passed, it was really just an anti-litter campaign. That's all it was. People were sick of seeing, you know, their beaches and roadsides, you know, covered in cans and bottles. So they put a bounty on them, 5 cents back in the 70s. Equates to about 30 cents, excuse me, 30 cents today. So there was a real incentive to, you know, look at your container a different way. And I think the initial push is going to have to come from a more legislative side, because you cannot get cooperation on all those levels, consumer, distributor, retailer, producer, to just all of a sudden magically orchestrate a refillable program. The more breweries that participate in something like that, the stronger it is. You know, if you've got two breweries in a state of hundreds of breweries trying to make refillables a reality for the state, they're doing all the legwork and they're not benefiting from the scale of having everyone participate. So I think, if I could say the one thing that would make this happen, it's really just the consumers wanting it. I would say it's feeling sick of environmental, or I guess feeling sick of living in a more wasteful society, and really demanding that either their breweries or their state government start picking up the slack and giving them options to live more sustainably. But it really has to start. Has to start somewhere. And, we're kind of, we know there's demand, but we're kind of like kickstarting it in a way. Ryan, we just started this program in early July. It's been 3 months. It's in its total infancy. So we have yet to see what the overall impact's going to be, what the real reception is like. There's a lot of unknowns, but we're gonna march forward and do this, and we really hope that other states carry on, because just like I was saying with two breweries versus 100 breweries being on board, the same is true with other states. So let's say California creates its own refillable program. Well, that doesn't just benefit Californians; it also benefits Oregonians, because the brewery that they love that can't do refillables because they distribute a lot of beer to California, and it's really difficult to split up their packaging line and have two different SKUs, or however their whatever hurdle they're being presented with. If other states are able to take their bottles and be a part of a refillable network, then there's a lot more chance for other breweries to join on. So that's definitely one of our hopes, is that this bottle is not limited to Oregon. We're using Oregon as a testing ground. We control the entire collection infrastructure, so we can kind of baby it, bring it up to its past its adolescence, and hopefully let it have some legs in other states, so then these bottles can travel interstate.
Yeah. So I guess you kind of touched on this, but I think a lot of these kind of changes, as you mentioned, if it comes from the top down, that obviously gives it a big push. But I think these days, politically, and just in general, in regards to industries and environmental type stuff, a lot of it, this kind of stuff needs to come from grassroots, needs to come from the bottom up. So is there, if in that situation where the people are demanding it and making it happen, is that something from state to state, are this the recycling different from state to state, where it might be by the city or by the county, not necessarily a state run? So I guess the question would be if this was to go to a different state, depending on the state, is this something that people are gonna have to do from the grassroots? Are they gonna have to create a collective, or create a organization of participating breweries and people that are interested in start their own program? What does that look like?
I think you're right. I think it will have to be grassroots, because even among, if you're just talking about states that have a deposit, we call them bottle bill states, they're largely pretty fragmented. So it's not, one company that's running the pickups. It's you've got several participants, and it could be regionally based. And then, of course, you look at municipal recycling in general, it's a mixed bag. Some don't accept glass, for instance, in the recycling stream. In those cases, you have to create a whole another type of pickup. And Yeah, just doing a survey across the U.S., it is mixed, and I think there is no, like, you can't just stamp this out as a national model, unfortunately. You really have to tailor it to what are the unique constraints of each locality. But the flip side is, and the tricky part is, breweries have a lot more national reach than they ever have before. So, you know, you've got what was a small brewery that could only distribute within a couple hundred miles now can get their beer, you know, to the other coast or to China or Japan and Norway and beyond. So I think that is definitely one of the big hurdles, is how do you replicate something like this while still being sensitive to the unique constraints. And right now, you know, we don't have any great answers. What we're hoping is that because we put enough thought into this bottle shape, if we get other sort of entrepreneurial people or states that want to start taking on refillables, that they can, and they can find a way to make it work in their own way, and really leverage the fact that they can now send all the refillables to Oregon, and those bottles will still have a place to be reused. But yeah, that is a really great question that we have way more questions than answers to. I will definitely give a little nod to California, particularly because there's a company there called Conscious Container, run by Karen McNamara, who is doing incredible work there. Very much a grassroots kind of model, where she's working within a very tricky bottle return market. And working with breweries that are just absolutely passionate about refillables, and really trying to make this make refillables happen in California. And it's really from it's from the ground up. It's from people wanting it, people spending a lot more effort in returning the bottles back to her collection points. Instead of just simply tossing them in the curbside bin. So she's mobilizing a culture in California, and that's exactly the kind of stuff we're excited about.
Yeah, I'm sure California will be a big one for that whole initiative, I'm sure. And then also, like, I'm not too familiar, but like, I know California just had a recent proposition passed for like the BPA warnings. Do you know, is that still something that's an issue in cans, that BPA warning would affect, and would that push people to glass?
It definitely is. You know, I have not seen studies about that, but it's definitely raising people's awareness that there is plastic inside of cans. I think there's kind of been a lot of not misinformation, but just not a full picture of understanding of what their containers do and what they're made of. And yeah, cans have a plastic liner, because if they don't, they would they'd impart a metallic taste to your beer. That may be a factor, but I would say there's such a momentum for cans right now that if it is affecting it, it is just lowering that acceleration by a little bit. I mean, you know, cans have a lot of benefits, as I mentioned before, with their lightweight stuff, and you know, they give consumers a lot of options. You know, you can grab cans and say, well, maybe I can take these to the beach or, you know, the river or the park, wherever, and don't have to worry about, you know, bottles breaking, and they're easy to throw around. So I think that is probably part of the appeal as well. But what I see maybe moving things a little bit more is the tariffs they were seeing on aluminum. And that may make cans more expensive. That is, that's one thing that I've been reading about that may tip the scale a little bit. You know, cans are relatively on par with glass, but if all of a sudden the price of aluminum is double, in addition to having, there's some supply issues in the United States with getting cans manufactured in time. At the producer level, I think is where you might see, well, okay, you know, Brewery A is weighing the benefits of, do I buy a domestically produced glass bottle, or that, you know, I can get anytime I want, or should I take the risk on whether or not I can get cans this month? And, you know, even though I've got my distributor and my retailer saying, the more cans, the better, man. I think, yeah, that's the sort of question that they're going to be faced with. Like, as these prices potentially rise, supplies get a little tight, those decisions might be made at the brewery level. The consumers are still, they're still going to want cans for sure. For the foreseeable future.
Yeah, there's obviously those benefits. So there's probably just going to be this kind of equilibrium or balance between cans and these kind of bottles, and that, yeah, that'll probably be around to stay. You know, like you mentioned, going out to the river or something, that's, the cans are nice for that reason there. So yeah, I kind of wanted to kind of move a little bit to talking about a bit of the kind of marketing and branding aspects of these kind of bottles, going from, you know, like the retail stuff, regarding like shelf space and the moves, or kind of trends, I guess, between the 22 ounces and these 500 mils. But yeah, I kind of maybe want to start with the label aspect. Yeah, I mean, obviously, these being washable and reusable, what does the labels situation look like in regards to how a brewery might transition to using these bottles and the labels that go on them? Like, what would that look like?
Yeah, good question. So, historically, you know, with refillable programs, the label is going to be a paper label that's applied with glue on the back, and that glue is water soluble. I mean, you know, pick up any major brand of beer and that's exactly the label you've got. You can like scratch the label off. Those labels work really well in bottle washing applications. You know, the labels, you know, as you probably can tell when you put them in like a cooler of ice, the labels don't stay on very well. And that's exactly what you want with the bottle washer.
Yeah.
However, smaller breweries, obviously huge momentum with packaging and wanting to do smaller and smaller batch sizes, and need to invest, not have as much capital to invest in packaging lines and stuff like that. So there's been a huge move towards sticker labels, which we call in industry pressure sensitive labels, or PSLs. These labels are an order of magnitude more expensive than a paper label, but the equipment to apply them is also an order of magnitude less expensive. So much reduced upfront costs, more expensive sustaining cost, but it really allows breweries to be very flexible. You know, you can run a couple thousand labels from your printer, usually to a local person, and then switch brands when you're doing your new seasonal stuff. I think it allows breweries to be very flexible, and that's just how things have sort of shaken out at the sort of microbrew level. And let's say with regards to washability, the sticker labels present a huge problem, because if you've ever homebrewed and try to rip your labels off your bottles, it's the sticker labels that give you the most grief. And that's because the adhesive on them is really not water soluble. And a lot of times it's pretty bulletproof, which is great from a brewery standpoint, because no matter what condition that bottle gets put in, you know, sweats, it, you know, goes in the ice bucket, dries out, whatever, that label is just going to stay on there and hang on for dear life. And so we're faced with this conundrum of, okay, we've got a lot of breweries that are using sticker labels, hardly any that are using paper labels, but we need them to be washable. So again, you know, have to give credit where credit's due. So I'm looking at Canada right now. They have this kind of funny combination of really strong refillable bottle program and really strong small brewery movement, right? It's, you know, not in Germany, it's like just starting to come online, but in Canada, you know, there's been small breweries popping up as long as the United States. And they've found label technology that both works for their small packaging lines, you know, the sticker style application, and bottle washers. So we've worked a lot with Canadian brewers and Canadian label suppliers to figure out how can we bring that technology to the US. And that's exactly where we are at today. We've got our breweries that are signed up with the program, they are using sticker labels with an adhesive that is washable and a face stock that is made of paper. That's another key. If it's made of plastic, which a lot of bottles are, then that plastic makes it impenetrable to soaking. So you don't actually get that that adhesive to lift off. So there's been a lot of R&D and time put into this, but that's where we're at right now. So brewers basically have the best of both worlds with regard to that.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be a huge deal, obviously, you know, for the washables and to be able to be nimble and still do short runs like you mentioned is obviously going to be a huge one. On the retail side of things, kind of interested to hear your perspectives on maybe like bottle trends. You know, you kind of mentioned the decline of the 22 ounce bomber size. I mean, obviously retailers have preferences, some, you know, regards to how things stack on the shelf or line up on the shelf. So can you maybe talk about the trends in the bottle sizes, moving away from 22 ounces and kind of how that's fitting into retail space?
So that trend, has largely been driven by just, the convenience and package size. I think 22s came to rise, it became the American large format standard, and really held ground for a long time. No one was really questioning why are we pouring beer out of a 22 ounce bottle. It would just, some breweries started it and it became a very standard mold offered by a lot of glass companies. So it became readily available, relatively cheap. And I think the main consumer question or problem is that 22 ounces is just an odd amount of beer. It's a little too much for one person, and it's a little too little to share. And so when folks started introducing a smaller format that was more for like a regular everyday drinking beer, you know, your IPAs, pilsners, what have you, not, you know, I'm not talking about barley wine and such, it became a lot more attractive for people to try. In addition to that, usually the price point comes down a little bit. You know, it's 16.9 ounces, so getting about 5 less ounces of beer, you're paying about usually $1 less. And you're talking about a consumer who's wandering the beer aisle looking to try something new. That hurdle, that initial investment on, you know, giving something a whirl is a lot lower for a 500 milliliter bottle. You don't have to commit to as much beer. You don't have to commit to as much money. What a great option. And so that's how, you know, we kind of saw this, the writing on the wall with the market shying away from the 22 ounce bottle to the 500s. Additionally, I think it really kind of, it dovetails nicely with our program in that it harkens to a more European eco-consciousness consumer. 500 milliliter bottle is just, it has that certain panache that a 22 ounce bottle doesn't. So that's the reason we chose that. And with other package formats, you know, I think it's no surprise, but you're seeing a lot of brewers really struggle with margins. There's a tight squeeze happening. You know, beer prices aren't really rising a whole lot, but costs are. And 12 ounce bottles are hanging on the market. They're, for small breweries, they're very hard package to make happen. But we recognize that breweries like Widmer and Deschutes are not retiring 12 ounce bottles anytime soon. And that's certainly always going to be on the market, at least for the long term. So we also saw that that would be a good opportunity to have as an option as well.
You mentioned before too, when we talked, that there's like no standard size for like a 500 milliliter bottle, and or, you know, shape or, you know, format. And I think, like, you know, that's, I think, appealing sometimes to the breweries, because if you can get yourself like a cool funky shaped bottle, then that kind of makes you stand out on the shelf a little bit. I guess, I don't know, how are you maybe addressing the fact that, like, this is going to be the same bottle shape going from brewery to brewery? Is it just like, well, guess what? If you want to be part of this program and be this, you know, have this awesome environmental, you know, reduction in your footprint, this is just what it's going to be? Or like, how does that come into play?
Still in the nascence of exploring this, but there is definitely, right now, there's some serious advantage to having like a conscription style bottle, right? Like, all look the same. And I think, you know, I can say on one hand, on the West Coast, I can't speak too much on the East Coast, but on the West Coast, there's definitely been a strong move towards breweries not caring about their individual bottles. You may recall Widmer and Deschutes used to have special embossing on their glass. They had a distinctive bottle, and those don't exist anymore. The, you know, where the marketing matters is on the label, and that's and whether that was a cost consideration or a consumer perception, I really couldn't tell you. So that's, there's definitely going to be some cultural change and cultural acceptance among brewers that we're hoping are understanding that, yes, individual bottles are not easily washed, right? It requires a lot more resources to shape sort your bottles from the rest of the stream. You know, we're working with one brewery in particular who is introducing a new package size with refillable bottles, but their other package size is a very unique shape. And they're, I would say, grappling internally with, well, do we continue with this bottle, or do we go on to a refillable bottle that looks like all the others? I think, you know, the early brewers have the advantage of being the unique bottle on the shelf. But our hope is that eventually that advantage goes away because everyone's in it. One thing, you know, from like a technology point of view, is we're looking at, can these bottles actually be potentially screen printed? Right now, the screen printing that you see on the market is really difficult to remove. You need probably like a solvent or something to get it off. It won't come off in bottle washing situations. So that would be one way to address, like, okay, standard bottle, but here's what else you've got. You know, there are a lot of ways to address that, but really, if you have a mix of unique bottles out there, the program will start floundering. In fact, we're seeing that in Germany right now. more and more breweries in Germany are finding marketing benefits to having a unique shape. And they are, the bottle is not able to be recaptured in the same way, right? So like you used to have reciprocity with breweries. You get brewery B's bottle back and your brewery A, it doesn't matter because you can wash it and fill it with your beer and it all looks the same anyways. So my thought is that craft beer market is maturing, and in mature markets you get more standardization in some elements, and I think with refillables that will definitely be either a marketing play, or you kind of have to accept that your bottle is going to be standard in a way. Yeah,
more uniform. Yeah, well, I think that makes sense. And I mean, I think as you mentioned, I think things maturing, and again, you mentioned like the decorative kind of like trade dress on bottles that have kind of faded away or whatever. Then, yeah, I mean, all of your branding and stuff is really coming from the label that's wrapping around it. So, I mean, obviously there's a bit of an appeal to some sort of a unique bottle shape. But yeah, I can see a point where that's going to be a little bit less of an issue, especially if you're going to be able to trade off that environmental impact and hopefully the consumers can see that same point as well and ride along with that. So yeah. So and again, I'm going back onto the retail point. There's a whole section obviously right now with the 22 ounces, the bombers, and we're seeing stuff transition to some shelf spacing for the 500 milliliter bottles. And I know retail can drive kind of, demand or for packaging formats. I mean, how else do you see these kind of refillable bottles fitting into that retail shelf and maybe how retailers might be promoting these bottles and or like, fitting into how the retail shelves are right now?
I see as the program grows, as you've got more and more refillable options out there and consumers are just more actively seeking their beer to be sustainable, retailers are going to have to, or hopefully will, adjust to these, growing tastes in the consumer and start organizing their shelving accordingly. I remember when gluten-free products were becoming more and more popular, you kind of had to go to aisle one and then to aisle four or wherever to find whichever products you were trying to find specifically for your diet. And now more often you see these products all organized in one easy section. So, it's very convenient for that shopper. And I see the same opportunity for refillables. So the consumer who's really, really wants to drink beer, really wants their local beer, but at the same time, they're willing to explore something new and want to just see what options are out there for sustainable beer. And as I mentioned before, 40% of the package of your beer, top to bottom is of the carbon footprint is the glass container itself. So when you're trying to drink sustainable, drinking refillable is your best bet. So for consumers who are hip to that, they'll want to be able to identify these bottles in an easy way. And I see a huge potential for reorganization of the beer aisle such that you've got your sustainable bottles here, followed by, your local or your however else you're organizing. Usually it's like locally, regionally, and nationally. But it gives a little nod to the beer and as well as to the consumer. It's the retailer saying, hey, we recognize that you want to be able to find these bottles, and so here they are for you. So that is, I think, in the not too distant future. But it's, I think it could really change the way beer is sold. If you've got a store organizing it that way that would really turn people's head and say, why is the store doing that? Why are they putting all these refillables in one section? And hopefully the information on sustainability, you know, it could be positioned right there as well. So that's my little forecast in the future for you, Ryan.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome, man. And like, I like how you can kind of compare that to, you know, now you've got the kind of organic section that's kind of a must have, I think, you know, in a lot of supermarkets, or yeah, gluten free. Yeah, man, I think that would be awesome. Just in like, you know, and I guess this was probably for like local beers too, depending on how the washing and refilling program works. But, you know, knowing that you can just go to this section and learn about it, or if you already know about it, you can just go look for that section. And I'm sure once consumers are more hip to this and they've got the system down, you know they can head to this section, they can pick up, you know, their kind of beer of choice, and then they can kind of get it into their stream. They can kind of just like, okay, when I'm done with this, I'm going to put this back into my refillable bottles and get ready to return them. That seems like that can kind of create a nice little ecosystem and kind of process for that to work out. So, yeah. Well, cool, man. I think we're at a good spot to leave this off here. Yeah. And I think this is really a great program. Thanks for joining on and talking about it. And I think, yeah, hopefully this can keep growing. And, I think it's an interesting thing. Obviously it's not new. But it's funny. I imagine there might be a lot of people that just may not even be aware of that just because it's of, you know, how we've been getting used to this whole kind of like disposable culture, or, you know, maybe recyclable, but mostly disposable. So, if people want to learn more about this or maybe get a hold of you in any way, like where should people go to learn more and find out what you got going on?
Check out the website, bottledropcenters.com/refill. That's my contacts on there, and that gives you basics info about the program. Feel free to put my contact on your page. Happy to leave my phone and email for anyone who wants to learn more. And yeah, just look out for the bottle in the beer aisle. You know, you'll see more and more Oregon breweries picking up this bottle. And if you just turn the bottle 90 degrees to the right, you'll see a little bit more. You'll see a little section that has some information about the program, where to return the bottles, the website, and environmental information. So,
perfect. That's awesome. Well, cool. Nick, I appreciate you taking some time this morning and joining us and talking all about this refillable program. I think it's really great. Yeah, I hope, you know, the most success possible. I'll definitely be keeping an eye on it. So, yeah, I mean, thanks for joining us, Nick.
Thank you, Ryan. It's been my pleasure.